your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web. It's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one. Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 14 years now at the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. How's everybody doing out there? Today we're going to take a break from all the madness in the world, and I think you're going to really enjoy today's show. I know I'm looking forward to it. Let me tell you a little bit about the author that's joining me today. Her name is Betsy Thompson. She's a Philadelphia native. She's got a BFA from the University of Pennsylvania. She was an account executive for a lot of radio stations in Philly. She also worked as a commercial print model. And then after moving to California, she struggled and nearly became homeless. And after she recognized her tendency to blame everyone else for her problems, she decided to become accountable and recover. And for the next 18 years, she worked in an entertainment executive in the film industry. She retired in 2005, and she writes full-time now. And I got her book, I don't know, maybe a month ago. The book is called The What Happens If I Book, How to Make Action Reaction Work for You Instead of Against You. And I said, well, this looks like an interesting little book. And I can tell you, I got through the book probably in a day, and I thought it was smoking hot. So I'm really happy to have Betsy with me this morning. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for writing something that I didn't have to get like a brain fart trying to read. I have to tell you, Betsy, I read through the whole book, and I think it's great. And, you know, I've had the experience in my own life of coming across and some people very close to me who I would say have made a living out of victimhood. And it's very difficult to get through to somebody who always sees themselves as a victim. So I think this is like the best book for all kinds of gifts for so many different types of people.
Well, you know, it takes somebody who's been there to know what it's all about.
Right, exactly. And that's
so
what I think,
I'd have to say that I really lived the first half of my life in that victimhood state, blaming everyone else for every problem I ever had. Just whoever I could find to blame. And blame took me to a place in my life where I was almost homeless. Mm-hmm. So, I really had to sink or swim. And, one night, I was in California at the time, and somebody asked me to go to some meeting, and I said, sure, why not? So I went, and it was Marianne Williamson talking about The Course in Miracles. And for me, the course was all about taking responsibility, and after I did, my whole life changed. I mean, and one of the things I took responsibility for was the fact that I had this gift of being able to communicate with spirit, and I had ignored it. I knew I'd had it when I was 5 years old, and my sister reacted so violently to it when I told her what I was doing that I stopped doing it. And so I just got to this place, Maria, where I said, life isn't working for me, so I have to change it. And it was so empowering when I realized that. Took responsibility for the fact that I had made the choices that had gotten me almost homeless. Nobody else had made those choices. I had made those choices, and I had to become accountable. And it was so powerful because once I said, okay, if I got myself in this situation, then I can jolly well get myself out of this situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people are really still stuck in the blame game. You know, they have so many people I know of, you know, the world owes me a living, or the world is against me, or, you know, oh, I told you I was getting sick and now I'm sick. You know, they just don't look at, you know, the fact that what you think is what you create.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, I don't recommend anybody becoming almost homeless to realize that we are accountable human beings and we are autonomous human beings, but it worked for me. And I sometimes wonder why I took such drastic measures, but, you know, I guess everybody has their own path and their own way of evolving and their own means of finding answers. But this one was sure quick, because 3 weeks after I acknowledged the gift and said I was going to use it, I was like saying this prayer in my little one-room hovel. I was saying that I want to use a gift, I want to share it, but gee, I sure need a job while I do it. And 3 weeks later, I had the job the second day that Castle Rock Entertainment was in business.
Wow, good for you. Good for you.
And then I stayed with the same man for the next 18 years working for him, and until I was able to retire. It was an amazing, amazing journey after being, you know, having nothing,
mm-hmm.
being able to retire. And so I know what happens when you acknowledge who you are and are willing to let the chips fall where they may after you do that.
Right. Well, you know, I have a very dear friend who, I don't know if we can call it the same as a victimhood or victimization, but she's finally coming to the realization that she believes and has all her life, which has really annoyed her and gives her high stress, that she's a fixer, that she has to fix other people's problems. And it ends up she's the one that carries the stress and strain while the person with the problem is just skipping along. So I was talking with her this week, and I said to her, listen, you need to adapt this attitude of who owns the problem, because she gets herself physically sick if people don't take her advice. You know, if you could just talk to her in conversation and she thinks right away she's got to fix your problem. And then she gets very frustrated when she can't.
Yeah.
So what if somebody has a problem? Can somebody else fix it?
No. You know, her problem is that she thinks she has to be a fixer. And so she's got to deal with her own problem instead of worrying about the problems of other people. Because until she deals with what is the reason that she thinks she has to be a fixer, nothing's going to change.
Right. Now, I have to tell you, I don't know what kind of reactions you've gotten to your book or anything like that. But I do want to tell you, usually when I'm reading a book, you know, people at the gym will see me and they'll say, what are you reading now, Maria? Or my friends, I'll always discuss it with my friends. But I have to tell you, I have gotten into the deepest of the deep conversations with one of the things you posit in the book. And I want to see, I think it is, the what happens, or the chapter on think I have to find the perfect mate. And I want to share this with you because I wanted to dialogue with you on it too, because it's one of those questions that you're going to constantly have conversations about. Is it okay if I just read a little
sure.
paragraph out of it?
Sure.
Okay. So I'm looking at page 108. And it says, how must a sexual partner be in order to live up to your hopes and dreams? Do you put these same demands on your friendships? If you have many long-term pals and many short-term romances, you need to ask what is working long-term that isn't working short-term. List all the ways you nurture your friendships with forgiveness, tolerance, initiative, and loyalty, and ask if you bring the same devotion to those who look to you for romance. Well, I have to tell you, when I read that, I was like, that's a great question. Why is it that you can have long-term friends? And trust me, I have friends that have been my friends for 20, 25 years. And we seem to be so much more forgiving with them than we would with our mates. And everybody I've asked, whether they're single or married or whatnot, really gets taken back by the question. And I mean, it really makes you think.
Yeah, because we expect the mates for somehow to be perfect for us, to fix our life, to make it right, to make us whole, instead of realizing that you can only have a whole relationship with someone if each person brings their wholeness to the union. No one else can fix you. No one else can make you what you aren't. You accept your friends for who they are, and you know they have faults, and you accept them anyway, and you don't judge them. They're just your friends, and then when you have the mate, they're supposed to be perfect. I know there's no such thing as the perfect mate, because and when you think about the voice inside of you that keeps you looking for this, for something impossible to find, you have to question what does that have to tell you about the voice inside that keeps you looking? because that's the ego in you that doesn't want you to find happiness with anyone, and so it keeps telling you that this person isn't what they should be, so you have to look for somebody else who is what they should be, where everyone is already who they need to be.
Right, right. But, you know, some of the concepts, or I don't even know if we can call them answers, some of the concepts we came up with that, with your friend, it's different because you're not sharing. You're not cohabitating, number one. You're not sharing financial duties and obligations. And you don't have the stress or desire that sex can put on a relationship. But I will tell you, we're still trying to figure it out.
It just means that if you have a partner in your life, then you're brave enough to, your soul thinks that you're strong enough to deal with the challenges that it offers you. It just means that you're ready for that challenge. That's all. I mean, I think we all have in our lives exactly what it is we need to have for the growth we're here to live. So if you have a mate and you're having trouble, then it's really, it's never about the other person changing. It's always about the person who is complaining changing, because people don't change to suit you. They change to suit their own growth, and they change when they're good and ready to change, not when you want them to change. Mm-hmm. So if there's something about your mate that is irritating you like crazy, then it's that the person is telling you something about yourself that needs to be looked at, because they're just a reflection. Everybody is a reflection to you. To us, to whoever, whatever situation you're in, whether it's with your mate, your friend, your job, whatever, or your children, they're reflecting something back to you you need to look at. So it isn't about the other person changing, it's about you looking what that growth is all about. Because once you've acknowledged what the growth is, you move on to the next thing that needs to be looked at, and that just sort of falls by the wayside. It's not important anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I mean, I got to tell you, I find it pretty hard. I had found it, I should say, pretty hard to have to try to tiptoe or soften the blow talking to a mate about an issue that annoyed me compared to talking to a friend about it. And I'm still trying to really come to terms with that.
Well, I can tell you about a personal experience that I had. I was in my job, I was having trouble with someone I was working with because it seemed to me that they were constantly patronizing me, and I found it so irritating. It was just getting more and more aggravating by the day. And I'd already heard about these ideas by the time this was happening, and so I went home and I said, okay, Betsy, now's the time you got to put your money where your mouth is. And so I said to myself, okay, so if this person is mirroring me, how have I patronized somebody else? And I realized immediately, as soon as I put the question to myself, where I had been doing that. I had a friend in my life who was making some changes in her life, and we were talking about her future, and I was acting like I knew what she should do better than she knew what she should do. Mm-hmm. And I instantly realized what I had been doing. I'd been doing the same exact thing to her that this person at work was doing to me. So I called her and I said, I just want to tell you that I've sort of woken up from our conversation, and I realized that you know better than anyone what you need to do with your life, and I trust that your soul within can guide you perfectly. And so I sort of made peace with myself in that idea, and then when I went back to work, the person was continued to be the same patronizing person they always were, but it didn't bother me anymore. Mm-hmm. It was as if I had this aura around me that represented all the thoughts I was putting out into the universe, and when a thought came back that I hadn't given, it didn't impact that protective circle, and it didn't bother me, it didn't impact my heart, I didn't feel awful, I just noticed it.
Wow, that's great. Well, years ago, I learned a cute little expression. It used to be, I honor you, your drama, but I don't want to be a part of it. Because sometimes people just like drama. And, it's like some people are actually happy when they're miserable. I know that's hard to imagine, but there are people that is their definition of happiness.
That's true. That's true. And they get that definition back. They'll have people in their lives who think that that is also their definition of happiness, being miserable. I've been there.
Misery loves company.
Yes, exactly. And you attract people back to you who have the same attitude you have. That's why if you don't like the attitude of somebody with you, you have to change your own attitude so you attract a different attitude back.
All right. Well, do you think there's anything wrong with a person who's genuinely happy and the people they might be spending time with are not, and after a while the happy person just says, I have to just get myself out of the situation because they're bringing me down?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think it happens without even trying. I think that if you change your attitude, they'll fall out of your life one way or another and won't be around you, because it's like oil and water, incompatible properties don't mix.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you do write this book where each chapter is very short and shortened to the point, the way I like it. And it really is a lot of, you know, what happens if I, and you go on and on. And I mean, you cover everything from, you know, choose who do you love and, you know, what if I don't pay back my loans? What if I become a killer? I mean, you really don't leave too much out in here. But you do talk about people, and I do know some people like this, and it took me a while to stop being that way. You know, I was never, I don't think I was a victim, but I know that I was a perfectionist. And I actually did believe that I had to be perfect. I mean, it was expected of me as a child, you know. I mean, that, you know, the way we grew up, you know, my father, if we took home a test paper from school and it was 100, we got 100 on it, he would say, you could do better. Okay. And no matter how many times we tried to explain that, that's the highest you can get. He said, no, you can do better. And I remember doing extra work on my next test and coming home with 100+.
Wow.
And my father said, I told you, you could do better.
Wow. Yes, well, I can identify with that, too. I felt that I was never doing enough, even though, you know, honor roll, never enough, never enough. But, you know, it's only because I realize now that it was not really my problem. I mean, I took it on as my problem, but it was the person who was telling me that I wasn't as much as I should be, that they felt they weren't as much as they should be. And so, therefore, they were projecting onto their children that same idea, you know, that you aren't as much as you need to be.
Right. Well, you know, it's a hard concept, Betsy, for people to get that life is always perfect.
Yeah. I don't think life isn't meant to be perfect. It's meant to be informative.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking for the impossible, and when you look for the impossible, you can't help but feel that you don't have what you should have. Things aren't the way they should be. Life isn't the way they should be. I don't have the people I should have mm-hmm. in my life. I don't have what I need. And that's a lack mentality, and when you're a lack mentality, you're attracting people into your life who are also in a lack mentality.
Right.
A big light bulb went off for me when I realize that the universe thinks that everything you express is love. Everything. So when I was expressing my patronization towards somebody else, the universe said, oh, Betsy thinks patronization is love, so let's give her lots of that back. And back it came.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really made me think, okay, the universe thinks everything I express is love. Okay, well, I started to ask myself, what am I expressing as my idea of love that's coming back to me?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, being around a person who expects perfection is very difficult to have a relationship with. I remember when I was married, my husband had two younger brothers. And they weren't that much younger. And I remember one day having a conversation with them and asking them, why is it that you guys aren't close to me, or you don't confide in me, and et cetera, et cetera. And they both actually told him, because he, believe me, was a perfectionist, you know, like attracted like in those days.
Yeah.
And his brother's answers were, we know that you're perfect and expect us to be perfect, and it's too hard for us to talk to you about our lives, because they didn't consider themselves perfect. They didn't want to be judged.
Wow.
And that was a pretty strong lesson for him.
Yeah, what great brothers that they would be honest with him.
Yeah, but it took, you know, 30 years to hear that honesty, but at least he got to hear it.
Yeah.
But I also know it's very difficult to live with a person who, you know, seeks perfection. I think of that TV show Monk, you know, where everything has to be in its place, and he's like hyper neurotic, and it's really hard for another person to, you know, be around that and try to come up to their standard.
Right.
You know, I do a lot of counseling and a lot of consultations with people, and a lot of times I hear them say, you know, I made so many mistakes in my life, you know, and they have so much regret and this and that. And I tell them, you know, you really never made a mistake, because everything you've done in your life took you to where you are right now.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a mistake in a perfectly balanced universe.
Mm-hmm.
Everything happens that leads to growth, or something you need to understand always. Yes, I don't think it's. The way I look at a mistake is I see it as an act without love, and then I know how to correct it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's well said. You know, one of the other things you said in your book, and I do agree with a lot of what you have in here, and I love the way you put it together. Is, and I'm going to compare it this way, because you say the journey is the prize. And I have a lot of students, whether I'm teaching them the medicine wheel or Reiki or whatever, and they get so spiritually anxious. They want to know everything. You know, they tell me, I want to know everything you know. And I want to say, well, it took me 60 years to learn everything I know. So you're not exactly going to get it in 3 months. And I think that even with spirituality, people seem to be in a hurry to reach the pinnacle. And I always tell them, listen, the end of the journey is death. So don't be in such a hurry. You know, the fun is actually in the journey.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you talk about it, and I think it was in the chapter on perfection, you do say the journey is the prize. And that's another hard concept for people to get, that life is, you know, it's a daily journey. It's a lesson. It's to be enjoyed.
Right, every day is, and I think it's about trusting that you always have exactly with you exactly what you need. That the universe is a generous giver. That it always wants you to have exactly what you need in front of you, and it always does. We don't always acknowledge that it's what we need, but that's where the trust comes in. That, you know, I have everything I need. Everything that I need in this moment is with me. It's a very profound thought and it takes a lot of focus to go back to it and back to it and back to it, because we get so distracted by the world of things and the pictures we see and what other people are doing. It's all very distracting and keeps us from remembering that we have everything we need in the moment. And that's
right.
A really important idea.
Well, you know, the important words there is in the moment. You know, there's way too many people that are constantly either spending their thought process in the past or on the future, and they kind of miss their lives. It's like, what about today?
Actually, that's how I explain what ego is, because ego doesn't want you enjoying your journey, and so it keeps you in the future that hasn't happened yet, in a past that's long since over, everywhere but in the moment, the only place love can be found.
Right, or as you say, when you love the moment, you stop worrying about happiness because you're too busy living it. You know, I've been telling people lately, you know, happiness is an inside job.
It is indeed. And so is knowledge, and so is spiritual knowledge. And so the people who think they want to know it all at once are living in delusional ideas, because their own spirituality is what they're trying to find, and only they can find it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's why I always tell people, you know, and even my listeners to the show, you know, take what resonates with you. You don't have to agree with everything I say. You know, whatever resonates, whatever feels right in your gut, then that's your truth. But I think, you know, looking around, especially at this world today that we're living in the midst of madness, too many people are disappointed or angry because they were really looking for someone else to lead them, and then they're disappointed in their leaders.
Right. That always happens when you put faith in other people instead of yourself. Nobody is here to make your life perfect. You're here to make your own life perfect. And as long as you think it's going to be somebody else, you'll move from person to person to person and always be disappointed. It's inevitable, because the journey is not about finding what you need from other people. It's about finding what you need from yourself.
Well,
it's like giving to others what it is you want to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you come across, you know, in chapter 3, the title is What Happens If I Live Without Integrity?
Yeah. The world seems like a very mysterious place. I always think of integrity as the idea that if people could read my mind, what would I want them to find there? And if I could read other people's minds, what would I hope to find in theirs? Because I think people can feel you, feel your emotions. They can feel how you feel about them. You don't have to say a single word, and they know how you feel about them. I know that's happened to me over and over again. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, what is it I'm putting out there about this person or other people? Am I being the person I want to be? Sounds complicated when you talk about integrity. How do you find integrity? But it really isn't. You just have to be the person you want other people to be. That's what it means to live with integrity.
Mm, absolutely. You know, years ago, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but there was a producer named Aaron Russo.
Yes.
and he has since left the planet. But I had some contact with him in the beginning of my show. We're looking at, you know, 14 years ago. But I never, for some reason, we never hooked up where I could get him on my show. And when he did get his cancer, you know, and died, one of his PR guy contacted me, and he gave me a wonderful compliment. He says, "Maria, I'm sorry you never got to hook up with Aaron, but one thing Aaron Russo always said about you is that Maria Heller always comes from integrity." And I took that as a huge compliment, and I know my audience feels the same way, because I can't sell out. You know, I don't know if it's a New York thing. I don't know if it's an Italian thing. I don't know if it's a spiritual thing, but I just can't. You know, it's just probably just the way I was made, or as my mother said, when they made you, they threw away the mold, but she always added, "Thank God."
Well, that's a wonderful, yes, that is a wonderful compliment, because it means that you're living true to yourself and honoring others at the same time.
Well, you know, I always believe you have to live it. You have to walk the talk, because I have to tell you, I have more respect for you because you've experienced what you experienced and then wrote the book than somebody who went to school, read a couple of books, and decided they were an expert on the subject, even though they never lived it. You know,
I think when you don't realize that what you give comes back to you, that's when you have trouble coping with life. It's a very simple idea, but not a lot of people accept it, the idea that whatever you give to somebody else is going to come back. And that's what that's the whole process of integrity. The universe doesn't recognize size. I remember when I was at work, and before I really understood this idea, sometimes I would take a pencil from work and use it at home with my projects, and it was like I would say to myself, well, it's only a pencil, you know, how big a deal can that be? But the universe doesn't recognize size; it just recognizes the action emotion behind the what you did. And the action emotion is the pencil's there; I can use it, and nobody will miss it anyway. And so the universe just sends you people who think it's fine to take from you. Mm-hmm. And somebody came along and took something that belonged to me just because it was there and they wanted it. And
right.
So that was a big lesson for me in how to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was writing this book, I was inspired by the very idea that I was trying to understand my life, and I was trying to figure out in that situation where I was patronizing somebody else, and I thought, well, I mean, we're all in the same boat. We're all trying to figure out what happens if I do this and what happens if I do that. And so I sat down and started to talk about what I was hoping to write with spirit, and then this is what happened. And I don't even know, when I started, I had no idea what the book was going to be like or how long it was going to be, what the chapters would be like. It just sort of poured right out of me, you know, chapter after chapter, all the things, the questions that I had myself, you know, what
right.
happens if I do this, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how the book was born.
Right, even though we're taught for every action there's an equal reaction. We don't really get that in life for some reason.
Yeah, well, it's I think our lives are emotional, really, because when you think back when we were kids and the things that you remember the moments that impacted you emotionally, because we live millions of moments we don't remember. And so I think our lives are really an emotional journey, and that what we're going to take with us and we leave here, it's going to be the emotion that we found and the
I'm losing your sound. I need you to talk a little louder or closer to the phone.
Okay, I was going to say that, is that better?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I was saying that we're on an emotional journey. When we were children, what we remember from being a child is what we felt. Situations that impacted us emotionally are the ones we remember. And therefore, I think our journey is emotional, and we will leave here with what we have found emotionally, and that's what it's all about to me. Every situation we're in, everything we're confronted with, is to help us go a little deeper within to find out who we are and the essence that we represent.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, John Lennon said it best. He said, "The love you make is the love you take."
Yeah, I like that.
So, you know, I totally agree with that. Betsy, we're going to go to a short break, but when we get back, I want to talk about some of the, I'll call them new age ideas or misteachings that you pretty much blow out of the water in this book. So stay with us. Betsy and I will be right back.
Relationships. You hear a lot of experts talk endlessly about having a successful relationship, but do they? Maria has combined her years of experience, spirituality, knowledge, wit, and wisdom about relationships into one small, concise, useful book, Relationships Cutting to the Chase. The most important relationship of all is the relationship you have with yourself. If you're not in a loving, healthy relationship with yourself, you'll continue to have problems in all types of relationships. Maria shows you how to have one and great relationships of all sorts in her latest book. You can find the book at maria.net. That's M-E-R-I-A.net. Under Maria's books, Stop Suffering and Enjoy a Happy Life with Fulfilling Relationships. You may decide to buy one for everyone you know. Order your copy now at maria.net. Now back to this fascinating show.
Welcome back. My guest today is Betsy Otter Thompson. You can find her on Facebook under Betsy Thompson. You can check out her website, BetsyThompson.com. We're talking about her book, The What Happens If I Book, How to Make Action Work For You, Action-Reaction Work For You Instead of Against You. Betsy, I might have got you a little nervous with my little lead-in at the end before the break about blowing some New Age concepts out of the water, but you surely did, and I love you for it. We have heard for so many years, do what you love, the money will follow. And then you get so many people, because they're following the wrong people and believing that, getting disappointed. Because, and you, when I saw the title of the chapter, I was like, wow, this gal really, she must be inside my head. I love it. What happens if I do what I love, but the money doesn't come?
Yeah. Well, you are still doing what you love. That's the short answer. But more importantly, why is money supposed to be around everything you love? We don't have that same criteria for other pleasures. Is a person who reads with a passion supposed to get rich from doing so? And why would the person who's doing their passion, another passion, get rich from it, but the person who reads did not? I mean, the universe is a logical place. It is not illogical. And money isn't the reward for doing what you love. Happiness is. I think this phrase came up like 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and so many latched onto it because they wanted to believe it, and they wanted to think it was true. And even I was, you know, when I first started writing, I was working in this job, and I kept thinking, and I wasn't earning any money from the writing at all, and I kept thinking that I was supposed to be getting money from the work, and I was very dissatisfied. But while I'm dissatisfied because I'm not earning any money from the writing, the money is pouring in from the entertainment job, and I'm just ignoring that blessing. I'm just ignoring it like it doesn't exist. I'm supposed to get paid because I'm doing my passion. Well, you know, it was a big waker up for me to realize that the universe is giving you what you need, and you can't demand where you think it's supposed to come from,
right?
Or from whom it is supposed to come. It's just about accepting with gratitude that the universe is supporting you.
Right. Well, don't you think that a lot of people, just from their thought process or expectations or the way they ask the universe, limit the universe in delivering to them what they need or require?
Absolutely, because we're so fixated in our own minds about how it's supposed to unfold instead of just accepting how it does unfold. And the universe always knows what we need. I mean, I needed to have that job for so many different reasons. I had so many wonderful lessons in it. It was a great blessing in my life. And so the universe was giving me everything that I needed when I needed it. And my writing was not as good then as it is now because my skills have improved. And so it was everything was perfect. I just didn't see it for a while because I wasn't willing to say that, you know, my own soul was wiser than my conscious self.
Right, right. Well, you know, I always tell people, you know, there's two timetables in life, ours and the universe's.
Yes.
And the universe always seems to deliver at the right time. And no matter how much you try, which used to be one of my specialties, was trying to push against the ocean. And then you realize after you get knocked down to the mud a few times that you really can't fight the tide. You have to wait for it to come in.
Yes, and this doesn't mean that you can't, if you have a passion in life, that you should give it up. It just means that if you need another job to support you in the meantime, by all means, get the other job.
Absolutely. You know, people say to me, you know, when I worked in, you know, corporate America, I made extremely good money, especially being a perfectionist many moons ago. But then I, you know, it was just my path and my passion that brought me to do what I do now. And people, you know, say, you know, but why do you do that, Maria? You can make so much more money, you know, working for someone else. But they don't understand. I love what I do. And the money will come from wherever the money is. It always seems to show up. You know, and I think that, you know, that's what I got out of your book is, you know, do what you love because you love doing it. That's your happiness. You know, I think we've been convinced that the only rewards are either food or money in this life.
And it's as if, you know, it's like you're putting conditions on the universe. You know, I'll do this if I get paid for it. Well, if you can't do something without worrying about being paid, it's not going to have any sustenance and it's not going to be able to have any stamina in your life anyway.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Or as you say in the book, let go of how abundance must flow and have fun with the abundance that is.
Yes.
You know? And again, you know, even when I teach, you know, I always tell people, you know, if you have expectations will always lead to disappointment.
Absolutely.
And I also think it also then will lead beyond disappointment back into victimhood. So there's nothing, you know, there's nothing worse than making yourself a victim when it's, you know, in truth, it's really not real. And I know some people that, you know, they could teach classes in how to be a victim. They're that good at it. And, you know, no matter how much you try and convince them until that light bulb goes off in their head, nothing's going to change and all you're going to do is get aggravated.
Yeah, I always thought I was a victim with my mother, and so when I finally realized, or I got the idea that, I don't know where I heard it or heard it anyway, that we choose our parents, and I thought to myself, okay, well,
right.
If I chose my mother, then why?
Uh-huh.
And so I started asking myself, you know, why did my soul choose my mother? What did I think would happen that was good in my life because I was her daughter?
Mm-hmm.
And when I put it that way, lo and behold, I could come up with some pretty good ideas of why she was helpful in my life. And the biggest one was that the very fact that we couldn't agree on anything, we had a completely different perspective on life, being here, what it was all about, our priorities were totally different. The very fact that she was that way was what motivated me to find a philosophy that did work for me. So she was like this motivator in my life that pushed me and pushed me and pushed me to leave what I didn't like and find what I did like. And so I got to this point of finding, and I did that with other qualities that I couldn't find in her before that I did find again. And I got to this point of being able to say, forgiving for the things that had happened, forgiving her for the things that had happened. And I even got a little bit past that and was able to say, well, why do I need to forgive somebody who is giving me the gift I needed?
Mm-hmm.
And I have this image of, before we get here, of us planning our journey and our soul being aware of exactly what it is that we need to learn in this journey. And so we're probably planning it with other people who have things they want to learn around us or because it would be a good fit for what they have to learn. And so my mother probably volunteered and said, well, I'll be your mother in this lifetime because I need to learn such and such from being that kind of person. And so then she comes here and she plays out her role that mm-hmm. I asked her to play and I agreed that she would play.
Right.
And then when we leave here, she's going to come up to me and say, well, did it work? Did it work? I'm going to say, yes, yes. It worked great. It worked great. And so if we can look at these challenges that we have in that way and ask ourselves, well, if I chose this challenge, or if I chose this person, then why? And then ask yourself, you know, figure out why.
Right. Well, you know, the hard part, you know, and it took me a while, is to realize that you have to move from forgiveness to thankfulness. And, you know, I'll share this with you, and, you know, I don't know, maybe my listeners know it, maybe they don't, but this year I just wrote my fourth book, and it's on relationships. And while I was writing it, I thought about my first husband. And, you know, I was very young, I was 20 years old when we got married, I think the whole thing was done by the time I was 23, he had to have been, at the time, the worst possible husband in the entire world, okay? Every single thing a man could do wrong, he did repeatedly, at least three times a day. And, you know, I can laugh about it now. It wasn't funny when I was 20. But everything from physical abuse to verbal abuse, sexual abuse, you name it. And I had, of course, remarried after that. And the years ticked by, but here I am 40 years later, And when I wrote my relationship book, I dedicated it to him as one of my greatest teachers. Because the lessons that he volunteered to bring to me, you know, it takes a while to wrap your head around that somebody would choose and volunteer to be a bastard. Okay. It takes a lot. But looking back, I am so grateful because it changed my attitude and behavior in every relationship since. And, you know, I had to move from forgiveness to actual gratitude, and it took a long time. But I couldn't think of anybody better to dedicate that book to.
I love that idea. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons that it's really impossible to judge other people in the paths that they take. Some of them look like, well, they look horrible to us, to our eyes. But we don't really have any idea what role they agreed to play when they came, just like you didn't realize at the time that your husband had agreed to play that role, and I didn't realize that my mother had agreed to play that role. But we don't know that about anybody else. We don't know what they're here for, how long they want to be here, mm-hmm. why they came, what they hope to understand from coming here. So it's impossible to judge their journeys, and we don't. I think we get, that's part of the problem with the ego interfering with love in our lives, that we get so focused on what other people are doing that we forget to ask ourselves, wait a minute, am I doing what I want to do? Am I doing what I hope to receive from other people? Forget about what everyone else is doing. What about me? Because the journey really vibrates out from our own essence, and that is what we attract back to us. And so we are basically creating our own experience here on Earth. But when you get so focused on what other people are doing, it takes you away from where you need to be focused.
Well, yeah, it goes back to the fixer, or goes back to a healer. You know, they were always busy healing and fixing everybody else as a way to avoid fixing and healing themselves. And that's another, you know, several chapters in this book on, you make the connection between your thoughts and your health, your physical body.
Yeah.
And a lot of people really get very upset when, you know, I could be counseling them or just in conversation. They're telling me, you know, this is wrong with their body, or this hurts or that hurts. And I'll immediately make the spiritual connection. But they don't, you know, they don't want to hear that they might actually be, making this happen in their body. They're not listening to their higher self, so their body is going to manifest what their mind is not listening to.
Right. The body is reflective energy. It exists simply because we agreed to have a body to show us about ourselves while we were journeying, and it manifests everything it needs to manifest to tell us everything we need to know. And when I have a wonderful story about this, and it was like a miracle, but I think it's what people call a miracle, but it isn't a miracle. It's a step-by-step process of understanding what the body's trying to tell you. Because when I came home from California, I was back with the family again, and all the old resentments that were coming up again about, they treated me badly, they didn't understand, their loyalties were misplaced, all these feelings of that I had felt when I had left. And I was like ruminating over these for about 3 months. And then one day I realized I had a lump in my back. And I have a big history of cancer in my family. And I called my doctor and I said, I feel a lump in my back. She said, come in right away. Came in that day. She looked at it. She said, yes, you have a lump in your back, and I want you to go in for an MRI tomorrow morning. I said, okay. So we scheduled the MRI. And I came home that night and I said, well, what the heck is happening here? First thing I did was I grabbed Louise Hay's book. In it, resentment and grudges are all about lumps in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized what was happening, and I did this amazing meditation that night, releasing all these feelings and realizing that the fact that my family had reacted to how they had something that had happened in my life was what motivated me to go to California. And when I got to California, everything turned around. And so they were the gift. They were the motivators again to me, and I could release them, and I could start thanking them for being this motivator. In the middle of this very long meditation, this feeling of creamy light came all the way up through my body. It was the most incredible feeling. And I went in for the MRI the next day, and the doctor called me in the afternoon, and she said, well, the lump is gone, the lump doesn't show up on the test, so she wanted me to go in for more tests. And mm-hmm. so I said, well, before I do that, I have to tell you what happened. And so I told her about this meditation and this release of my anger, my resentment feelings, and she said, well, come in this afternoon, and I'll take a look, and it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the idea that the body was saying, oh, she gets it. She gets mm-hmm. it. So there's no reason for the lump to be there. She gets it.
That's great. That's great. And, you know, I know so many people that have had similar stories, myself included. So, you know, there really is a strong connection, and, you know, there generally is a spiritual reason behind everything that's going on in your body, even though sometimes I'll say, okay, what is this? Why can't I figure it out? You have a great chapter in the book called What Happens If I Never Think I Have Enough Money? You know, I remember my husband saying one day, I don't even remember what it was. You know, we were living fairly well. We were both working, et cetera. And I don't remember the context, but he looked at me and he says, we have enough money. And I remember looking at him and saying, wow, what an oxymoron. Is there such a thing as enough money? And I don't think that I was alone in that. I think there's a lot of people that are worried today, and for good reason. I mean, the economy worldwide is crashing. The whole planet is crashing. But I know there's a lot of people that are worried that way. You know, what if I don't have enough money?
Yeah. Well, as you said, the definition of enough is individual. But I think that it's all about the mentality that you have. Then what you're telling the universe, that represents love to you. We go back to that idea. The universe thinks everything is love. So if you're saying, I don't have enough, I don't have enough, I don't have enough, the universe is getting the message that you think not having enough is love.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it keeps you in that state of being. If you say to the universe, I have everything I need, I have everything I want, I have everything I need, the universe thinks that everything you have everything you need, and that's love, and that it gives you more, and you appreciate it, then the universe gives you more to appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the things that you talk about in here, and I've read a lot of money books, you know, from the ARE and so many different people, but one thing that I do remember is a couple of things, actually. One, most people don't even have any idea at any given moment how much actual money, cash, they have in their pocket or their wallet. And that's supposedly a good test on how you control the money that you do have. But the other one is something that you mentioned in your book, and I have done this pretty recently. Every now and then, me and my friends sit down and we postulate over this and we go off on it. You say, if a lot of money fell into your lap today, how would you use it? And you know, these may seem like trite questions to some people, but I mean, for the listening audience, if you're sitting around with a couple of your friends, why not ask that question? Because I'm going to tell you, you're going to have conversations like you would never believe. Some of them will be fun, some will be funny, some will be outrageous, some will be crazy. But I remember having that discussion with one of my friends, and he said, you know, what would you do if, you know, all of a sudden a few million bucks landed on your, you know, at your door? What would you do with it? And the first thing I said to him was, I'd probably get my porch repaired, you know. And he started to laugh. And he said, Maria, if you had millions of dollars, wouldn't you want to just buy a new house? And I said, no, I like my house. I just need to get my porch repaired. You know, I didn't see that I would have to change my lifestyle. And the more you go into it, really think about it. You know, you may be asking the universe for a lot of money, but the universe is going to say, well, what are you going to do with it? You know, and I made up a list of all the people I would help, you know, the people that need cars, you know, I'd buy them a little Prius, you know, nothing outrageous, it wouldn't be limos. I would still spend consciously, you know, whose mortgages I would want to pay off, including my own. And I think that that's a fun exercise for people to do, especially when they're saying, I wish I could win the lottery. Well, you can read the stories. It ruins a lot of people's lives, and a few years later, they're broke.
Right. Everything at hand is given to us in life as a tool, and that includes money. And so the better you understand the loving use of the tool, the better your chances are for having it around.
Right. Or as you say in the book, which I think is a cute little mantra that people could use to just say, I live in plenty. You know, for me, you know, my mantra the past few months, which I've been sharing with a lot of my clients, is I have an abundance of joy on all levels of my life. Because that pretty much covers everything.
It does.
You know, and in a world where everybody's so rushed, you know, they still think they have to sit, you know, for 8 hours in meditation chanting, no place like home. I think that's a simple little way to start the day, or you even came up with a shorter one with, I live in plenty.
And then the universe gives you more of plenty. I mean, you're saying love is, that plenty is love, and it's just like it's a cycle that continues and continues and continues. And that's why the cycle of lack continues also, because you have to show the universe what you love, and you show the universe what you love by how you behave and how you act and what you give. And that's how the universe reads your aura and your energy and knows what to return to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know, I don't know if you saw the news. I know you're back east, but I think yesterday or maybe this morning, you know, it's like every day there's some killing going on somewhere. There was a shootout in a New Jersey mall, I believe. And, of course, we see a lot of shootouts, a lot of really bizarre events, a lot of murder out there, a lot of people getting killed. And I don't think people would expect to find a chapter in your book, but the chapter's called What Happens If I Resort to Killing?
Yeah.
I think the basis of a lot of these questions, similar to that that you have in this book, is thought-provoking and also about forgiveness and understanding.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we think of killers as being separate from us and different, and I think even a killer believes that what he's going to do is going to create love for him or her. I mean, I think that everything I've ever done in my life is because I thought it was going to bring me love. I wasn't always right, but I thought it was going to bring me love. And I think that a killer thinks that, too, for one reason or another. It's maybe a distorted way of thinking, but that's the way the killer is thinking. If I do this, it will bring me love. And you have to ask yourself, how desperate is somebody for love that they think they have to kill to get it? And so that sort of gives you a little compassion instead of the disgust and anger that comes up, that these people are searching for love too.
Right, exactly.
We have so much judgment around it because we forget that the soul always has everyone where they need to be, and that means that the person who gets killed is where that person needs to be as well. Mm-hmm. If the soul is all wise, if it isn't your time to go, if there isn't a reason for you to go at a certain time, you won't be there. That's what it means to trust that the soul knows what it's doing. And if you don't trust that, then what you say is the soul and that person is a dummy, and I think that's an impossible equation. The soul is all knowing.
Right. Well, I know whenever I read a story like that, or worse, you know, so many crazy stories, the first thing I say is, he must have had a reason. Because that helps me not get too attached to it and disgust it and start judging it.
Right.
And you say it really well in your book. You say, why is the killer with a reason you understand okay, while the killer with a reason you don't understand not okay? And I think that's another hard part of being human is staying out of judgment.
Yeah, it is. It is. But it's part of the reason we're here, I think, and it's part of the reason we decided to come here, because we needed to work on that in ourselves. And I think that we're all here because we all have similar lessons. And so it's all about helping each other and trying to help others by remembering what we want to remember, because I don't think you can really impact people's lives unless you are demonstrating the kind of life you hope they can live.
Absolutely. So it really does boil down to, you know, one truth that I believe is still a truth. You know, everything in this universe vibrates from two emotions, love or hate.
Yeah.
So I think you have to just ask yourself, am I coming from love or am I coming from hate?
Yeah.
And
or
I
fear. Or you could use the word fear for hate too, because it's,
yeah. Right. Well, I think fear certainly fits in the hate bucket, that's for sure. Anyway, I'm losing your sound again, Betsy.
Oh, okay. I'm here.
Don't drift away.
Okay.
Betsy, I do want to thank you for writing this book. I know you have several other books out, too. But I will recommend this book to everybody that wants to dump their complaints on me, especially all the victims out there. But it is extremely thought-provoking for, you know, a little book that seemed like an easy read. I probably spent more time discussing your book with my friends than a lot of other books I've read recently.
Well, I'm glad, because I think that's what makes people think about their own lives and what they're doing and how they're behaving and what they're putting out there.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Betsy. I really enjoyed it.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Take care. Betsy Otter Thompson. Check out her work at BetsyThompson.com. I got to tell you, this book is something else. It'll really get, if you run out of things to talk about with your friends, this is the book for the topic of the day. Anyway, tomorrow, Stars Are Us with Joe Anthony. I'll see you guys
Thank
then.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net.
often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information, all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.